true worship. June 10th, 1896. Typed. The worship of God does not consist in outward ceremonies or the observance of man-made creeds. Said Christ, "In vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men." Matthew 15, verse 9. And again, "God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth." John 4, verse 24. Christ came to our world at a time when moral power was fast disappearing from among men. Genuine religion had become corrupted. In its place, formality and legalism had reared the most rigid exactions. A round of superstitions and externals was made essential, while inward piety was, in a great measure, only a pretense. As the necessity for purity of heart was lost sight of, outward forms and ceremonies multiplied. Wickedness of every kind triumphed. The Bible was misapplied and modeled to suit the ideas and imaginations of men. The cleansing of hands and cups and utensils was considered of more consequence than the purification of the soul. From age to age, these maxims and traditions had been cherished, and with each succeeding age, additional inventions had been received with credulity, thus closing the way for the presentation of righteousness and truth. Christ came at a time when he was most needed to set before a perishing world the truth in its purity. He came to remove the mass of rubbish which had confused their spiritual understanding and perverted true worship, that the plan of salvation should not become buried under a mass of erroneous theories, a complication of maxims, falsehoods, and authoritative dogmas. He did not require submission to the assertions and theories of man's invention. He firmly and continuously resisted the sayings which rabbis, priests, and rulers had woven into the framework of truth, declaring before the assembled multitudes, "Ye teach for doctrines the commandments of men. Ye make void the law of God through your traditions." Matthew 15, verse 9, 6. Christ, in his Sermon on the Mount, stripped from the law this covering of rubbish, the "thou shalt" and "thou shalt not" of priests and rulers, and let the words of God in his great moral standard of righteousness appear in their true light. Christ taught them truth and righteousness. He required his hearers to accept nothing except that which they could bring to the law and to the testimony. If the words of their teachers were not in accordance with the words of God, their message was false and was to be rejected. If in the Word of God there were no other lessons given than those spoken by Christ from the Mount, this was light, which, if practiced, would have given men wisdom to shun false paths and enable them to gain heaven. Let all bear this in mind. The efforts of Christ's enemies to entice him by praise and flattery, to make him believe they were his friends, were unavailing. He read their purposes as an open book, and they knew he detected their efforts to ensnare him. He was constantly assailed, but in pity, sympathy, and love, he continued to labor for the salvation of lost, ungrateful men. Firmly and unswervingly, without feelings of revenge, without deviating one hair from principle, he told the truth, and followed and taught the law of heaven, which is righteousness and justice. The disciples of Christ will heed the Master's instruction. Their religion will not consist in outward observances, but will be founded on love to God, which leads to love for one another. The true spirit of worship is full of gratitude, humility, long-suffering. It is self-sacrificing, forbearing, merciful, and forgiving. It extends its influence over others, for it leads to active usefulness and sanctifies the whole life. Many spend their precious moments in wishing they could do some great thing. Their desires are apparently very great, but they do nothing in the sphere where God has placed them. They neglect the opportunities within their reach, for they are too commonplace for them to see and improve. Idle and useless, They wish and hope and look for some great thing to come for them, which it will be an honor for them to do. Unless their consciences are enlightened and they have the mind of Christ, they will always be dissatisfied. Christ spent his life in doing good just where he saw good to be done, within the sphere where he lived, and to those objects within his reach. He was not received in his own country and among his own people, but he found work among them on every hand. There were some places, however, where he did not many mighty miracles on account of their unbelief, for he himself declared, "A prophet is not without honor save in his own country and in his own house." Matthew 13, verse 57.
Here is a lesson for the discontented wishers, who refuse to take up the simple duties of life and consume their time in trying to make themselves happy and following their own inclinations. Christ denied all selfish desires, all worldly aggrandizement and avaricious ambition. Pride and envy, resentment and jealousy were excluded from his heart. He was always awake to the necessities of suffering humanity. The Father, whose eye can discern the least taint of imperfection, looking into the inner sanctuary of the soul, saw nothing but purity, excellence, and divine loveliness. This is true worship, and the life of Christ is the pattern which we are to copy.